It's good to be back in the United States of America. And I'm not saying that because I've been traveling abroad. Because in South Carolina, I don't believe we're in the same country. You know, you heard already tonight that we come from a state where we have the least union density in the country. Well, that's no longer true. Because in spite of all the oppression and all the efforts of the likes of the state chamber and the Republican Party in South Carolina, all the right-wing conservatives, our numbers are growing. It is growing because we believe in unionism. We believe that we must press forward. If we are going to turn the tide in South Carolina, it's going to come from the working class. It's going to come from organizing. And since we have started our campaign in South Carolina, we are now 49th. We just surpassed the Carolina to the north. North Carolina is now the least organized state in the union. So when you hear that song that says nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina, yeah, I don't know what Carolina they're talking about, but it's certainly not North and South Carolina, unless you happen to be one of the wealthy retirees from the North that's coming down and already got your gains and bringing your gains down with you. Certainly for them, probably nothing could be finer. But for those of us who must make our living in South Carolina, that's certainly not true. Because our workers in South Carolina earn on an average of 26% less than the national average. In South Carolina, workers are oppressed. And you know, let me just say, when I took office some 4 years ago, I saw our local union as a sleeping giant. You know, in the Bible it says, to whom much is given, much is required. There are not many labor organizations in South Carolina that can afford to do the things that Local 1422 could do. We are blessed with a national contract. Workers in New York City, with the high cost of living there, earn the same as the longshoremen do in Charleston, South Carolina. And that's because of a national contract. We recognize what unionism has done for us. And you know, there's not many labor organizations in South Carolina that have the earnings, that have the resources that we have. So, you know, we saw that it was our responsibility as a very blessed organization to get involved in the social ills that plague our state. We have a social responsibility. I myself was educated as a result of my father working the docks before me. And I had a choice. I did not have to go to the docks, but I went there because that was my choice. And it took me only 1 year after hitting those docks before I became a board member of Local 1422. I wanted to give back. And when I assumed the helm in 1997, we wanted to exercise our rights and give back to our community the support they had given us over the years. Because certainly, being a predominantly African-American local in the South, in Charleston, was not easy. And we had been in struggles before, and had it not been for the community, we know we would have lost some of those struggles. We saw that, we felt that uniting with our communities and building a solidarity group and bringing both community and religious community and labor together in South Carolina, we can make a difference. Because with only representing at that time 3.8% of all workers in South Carolina, how were we going to make a difference? You know, in 1998, we had an opportunity to elect for the first time in 12 years a Democratic governor in South Carolina. And because of his voting rights in the House of Representatives, we felt that this was someone that we could endorse. It was the only candidate that sought labor's endorsement. And that was going to be our first step to to get involved in the political process in our state if we were going to make a difference. Jim Hodges, candidate Jim Hodges at that time, sought out our endorsement. We went through the endorsement process of the state AFL-CIO and saw it was necessary that we support him. And you know, when we united with the community and we asked them to endorse the candidates that we had endorsed, that candidate was successful. And let me tell you, we have a Democratic governor as a result of our efforts in 98. We have a Republican lieutenant governor, a Republican state attorney general, a Republican secretary of state, a Republican, right-wing, ultra-conservative Republicans in the state of South Carolina. The only reason we have a Democratic governor in South Carolina right now is because of the labor movement. And recognizing that, Governor Hodges then wanted to reward labor for its efforts. I was appointed to his transition team, and that caught the attention of the likes of the State Chamber of Commerce and the South Carolina Manufacturing Alliance. They were put on alert at that time. And after that work was done, after we had all the appointed positions filled, it was time for him to turn to labor and say, what could we do for you? And I was the person in the front at that time. And I told him there was only one appointment that he could give the ILA that would be beneficial to its members. That is to nominate me to the board of the State Ports Authority, the board that governed the docks where the men and women of the ILA work. And when he agreed to do that and announced to the media that he was nominating Ken Riley to the board of the State Ports Authority, which would be the first time in the history of the authority that a person from labor would sit on that board, it was met with serious opposition. It was a grassroots alert issued by the State Chamber of Commerce to 2,800 of its members that you must contact your senators right now. We must not let this nomination be confirmed, because if it is confirmed, it was sent a message to the rest of the world that South Carolina was now open to labor unions. That nomination was defeated. And to make sure that that would never happen again, a bill was introduced to the House that will make it illegal for any union card-carrying member in the state of South Carolina to serve on any state board, agency, or commission. And if you were already on one, you had to resign. That bill passed the House. It passed the Senate subcommittees. But fortunately enough, we still had enough friends in the Senate to stop it. But again, it was reintroduced this year. Once again, it passed the House. And it's passed all the Senate judiciary committees. And it's now on the Senate calendar for debate. We're hoping again that we will be able to stop it. But let me just say, if you was to go to the South Carolina State Chamber of Commerce website and look at all the bills that they are watching and that they are supporting, that's one that they are supporting. When I took over in 1997, two non-union companies had already shown up in Charleston, South Carolina. And by the time the Nordina crisis hit, in 99, we had already gotten rid of one, and we now had to deal with the one that was remaining that was really, really seriously threatening us. And we applied for our picket permits, and we got them. And we picketed that operation three times successfully without incident. But you know, the cost of guarding that picket and the fact that some of our Teamster brothers coming into the terminal saw those picket signs and were stopping those rigs in the middle of the street and trying to find out what's going on, backing up traffic, the Ports Authority said, we got to do something with these people. And that's when they called upon the state to get involved in this picket. And that's when the state attorney general convened several law enforcement summits where not the Charleston Five was guilty of conspiracy. They were conspiring how they were going to send down these cops to crush that demonstration. And let me tell you, It was like a war zone on the night when that ship came to port. The ship was supposed to have come into Charleston the same day we had the massive rally in Columbia, South Carolina, to take down that dumb Confederate flag. But you see, they could not guard such a massive rally of over almost 50,000 individuals in Columbia, and also send 600 cops down to Charleston at the same time. South Carolina don't have that kind of resource. So they ordered that ship to stay out in the ocean for an extra couple of days until after that rally was over, which we were glad they did too, because guess where we were? In Columbia, South Carolina, right there in the midst of that rally. But shortly after the rally was over, the interstates were full with troopers and everything coming down to Charleston. They had already cleared out the jailhouse that night. They had made space for 90 inmates, thinking that at least 90 of us would go to jail that night. There were prison buses five deep coming down the interstate. By the time I got to the Union Hall, which is only 150 yards from the entrance to the terminal, we saw what one of the agents had told me a week ago. We were not going to believe what we were going to see. We saw helicopters hovering in the air. We saw armored personnel carriers. We saw snipers on the roof with night vision goggles. We saw canines. We saw patrolmen on horseback. You name it, they were there. They were ready for us. And you know, they had created a visible barrier and said that we were not going to cross that night. They had all the barricades up, but by the time we got down there, they had removed the barricades and had created an invisible line and dared us not to cross. I myself was not one of the first men down there, because we had told our members, if you were going down there tonight, we want you to be careful, and for God's sakes, do not engage those officers, because as most of you know, anything can happen at night. We know in a situation like that, it's very tense. We could be easily provoked. Someone could drive by and cause an incident to erupt. So we wanted our men to be very careful. But unless so, the president stayed back. But in less than 15 minutes, we had gotten the call that things had gotten ugly and that some of our men were already on the ground with their head busted open. Now, the cameras in Charleston, the media the next day, they only showed what they wanted to show. They did not show the beginning of the conflict, nor did they show the ending of the conflict. They showed just what was beneficial to the conservative viewer. But let me tell you, that night, because in my local, in case you don't know about the demographics, I have 800 members in my local, nearly 100% black, only two whites. The clerks and checkers local, 175 members doing the clerical work, 100% white. That's the way things are in the South. That's the way it came about. But because there were so many black workers on the front of that march going down to the picket lines, the officers were beating against their shields and yelling racial epithets to them to try to incite them, bring it on, niggers. You're going to bash your head tonight. It's very intimidating. And these men did not react, but when they crossed that invisible line, the order came to push them back. But nevertheless, that night, things got pretty ugly after the police attacked these men. We were called down, went down, and had reestablished calm, pushing all our guys back to the Union Hall, when one smart cop decided that maybe I was the cause of them even being down there, ran out of formation, clubbed me beside the head. I myself picked up 12 stitches that night and was ushered out of there so that I can go and get medical treatment. And that's when everything got very ugly. It provoked our men to respond. 9 men were arrested that night, thrown into jail, badly beaten, handcuffed. We were able to get them out the next day. They were charged with simple trespassing charges, which we felt that we could live with that because that was not very serious misdemeanor, because we know we would be back out there every time that ship came. But after we bailed them out of jail, in less than 24 hours, the state attorney general came in and said, I'm taking over this whole matter. I want these men rearrested. I'm upping the charges, the felony charges, conspiracy to riot, participating in a riot. Everyone had to go and turn themselves back in. We had to raise money among the members again to bail him out, because the same time he filed the charges, he contacted the Department of Labor and said to watch Local 1422 spending. If they spend one dime of the union treasury on those individual men of their local, they were coming down on the union. So we had to go into our pockets once again to raise the money for these guys. We got them out again. We went and hired some of the best attorneys money could buy in South Carolina, because we know how ruthless this attorney general is. We went to trial, preliminary trial. The state attorney general and his prosecutors prosecuted the case, presented the case before the judge, did not present one stitch of evidence against any one of the men. Our defense attorney simply said, Your Honor, I move that all charges be dismissed against these men because nothing has been entered as evidence against them. The charges were dropped. Thrown out of court, we thought we had a victory, only to find out that, again, this attorney general was going to the grand jury to seek indictments, where you can indict a head of letters because there's no room to offer a defense before a grand jury. He picked up three. Out of the nine, he only got indictments on three. But then they placed ads in every single paper in Charleston offering a reward for anyone who could identify these individuals. They got two more. And immediately these men were placed under, like you heard him said already, house arrest. Cannot be out of their homes after 7 p.m. at night unless they're working or at a union meeting. Couldn't travel this summer to Disney World to take their kids on vacation. They have been under those conditions from January 2000 until now. That's unheard of. I know of hardened criminals that's been arrested since then, walking the streets, roaming streets every night, travel anywhere they want to. But this is a political statement. This is a political attack against Local 1422 and the ILA. But since that time, we have been relentless in trying to raise the awareness of this struggle and everything that's embodied in this one struggle, because sometimes I've had to ask myself, what makes this particular labor dispute so different from all the others? It's because of everything that it represents. It represents globalization. You heard them talk about all the foreign and domestic capital that's being pumped into our region. The agenda of the State Chamber of Commerce is the agenda of all the multinationals that's now affiliated with them. The effort is to keep South Carolina a very attractive third world alternative to the other countries. They're saying to the rest of the world, bring your business to South Carolina. You don't have to go to Mexico, South America, the Philippines, or wherever, Indonesia. Bring your business to South Carolina. We have a third world-like conditions right here. And we've seen it every day. But it is the New South, and we are ready for the challenges of the New South. Certainly, we cannot do it by ourselves. Thankfully enough, President Sweeney, along with many others, have now, because of this one particular struggle, now see the need to focus on the South again, to start reorganizing the South, to start putting resources into the South, sending organizers down there. And we are calling on every single union in the country to start sending resources in the South. Send your organizers down there. The feel is right. It's right for organizing. Workers are actually tired of the abuse. They're tired of the oppression. They're tired of the mistreatment, but they are afraid. We launched a campaign against the workers that took our jobs on the Nordana vessel. We signed up 99 out of 116 workers. We filed a petition with the National Labor Relations Board. These workers say they had enough. We had an election scheduled for July 26th. We were waiting for what they call the Excelsior list to see who all would be eligible to participate in the election. We filed 99 cards. When the list came out, it was reduced to 35. We were almost at the point of withdrawing the petition. They set the parameters in such a way that there was almost an equal balance between the number of whites that was going to be eligible to vote and the number of blacks. We were able to talk to every black worker and got their assurance that they would be voting yes for the union. Not one white wanted to talk. Same oppression, same low wages, no benefits, no job security. Well, what's the problem? Anyone you care to guess? The color of the leadership. That's where racism is so detrimental to us in the South, where even though a worker may be white and suffering the same oppression, if the leadership is black, they do not want to be a part of that organization. And that's sad. And you know, that election took place on July 26th. The outcome is not has been established yet. As it stands right now, we have a 13-12 lead. 13 for the union, 12 for Matt. So 13 yes, 12 no. We have 9 challenged ballots. The union has challenged 7, and they have challenged 2. And now they have also filed now a challenge to the entire election. When they filed a challenge last week to that election, the union immediately agreed with the challenge and said, "You're right, we're wrong, let's have another election." We did it too so fast, they pulled back the challenge. No, that's all right. We don't want to have a new election again. Forget about it. They were not thinking. We know that a new deadline date would have been set, and which would have made about 30 more voters eligible. All would have been African American. All would have voted yes to the union. We already had the cards on them. So immediately, they pulled back the challenge. Now we got an ongoing battle between the union, the company, and the National Labor Relations Board, or whether they're going to allow us to have another election. Those are the kind of struggles that take place. And that's how, even in the South right now, still we are plagued with racism. And it entered and even into the workplace. And it actually keeps all of us oppressed. So we're going to continue this fight to defend the Charleston Five. We're going to continue the fight to defend the 27 members of our local who have been charged in a civil action, being sued for $1.5 million from the non-union company. So we got to defend them as well. We're going to be victorious because the tides are now turning. After this incident took place, we were taking a beating in the media. Everything was coming after us. Bad, bad unions. This is why we don't need unions in the state. But they are out of ammunition. Their message is old, cold, outdated, and no one's listening. The truth is now coming out. We are telling the story about the conspiracy that we have uncovered. We're telling about the illegal contract that was signed between Nordana, the company, and the Ports Authority, the state agency that should not have engaged in such a contract. We are telling the story about the conspiracy to attack these men. So our message now is fresh, and it's fresh right before the trial. We now have an attorney general who was once saying the only answer to this type of union aggression is jail, jail, and more jail. In the most recent article that just came out this week, he is saying, Of course, it's going to be very difficult to find a jury to convict any one of these men in South Carolina because it's just the nature of things and the nature of this case. The rhetoric has changed. He knows that the momentum and the support for the Charleston Five has grown. He has seen the international solidarity displayed when everyone came from far and near to Columbia, South Carolina on June 9th. He knows that the whole world is watching this case, and it's one that we are not going to lose. So we know that we're going to be victorious. The attorneys are fired up and excited about the evidence that they have that is now against the state and not against these workers. And so we know that we're going to be successful. We solicit your continued support, your prayers, and also we solicit your help when this International Day of Action occurred. As you heard already, dock workers around the world are going to respond. There are plans that it will not go unnoticed in those ports. And I can tell you, if you got any stocks in the market, you better watch it that day because I believe Wall Street is going to shake. So we welcome you to South Carolina to join us in a massive rally on the first day of the trial. The date has not been set. We know it'll be probably early November. For those who came down in June, they can tell you, even though it's in the midst of a struggle, we are known for our hospitality in the South, and we will make you all be very glad you came. We thank you for coming out on this Friday evening, supporting us. God bless you. And I'm certain that the men and women back home appreciate all that you're doing. Thank you very much.